Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Why are they the ultimate? Well, one of the reasons is because they're going to help you with ICD-10, the transition to the new codes. You need to know it, and you probably don't know it as well as you should. Check them out at www.webpt.com/podcast to find out more about ICD-10 for a free demo and a lot more. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders, Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrad. And, you know, over the last bunch of weeks, we talked a lot of business, and I want to start off with something here. So once upon a time, there was a physical therapist who was very interested in business. Every day, he would educate patients, think of ideas to improve his business, and read a lot. One day, he realized he enjoyed business more than actually being in the clinic. Because of that, he began to read even more business books and study business philosophy. Because of that, he began to see healthcare, and more specifically, delivery of physical therapy, very differently. Until, finally, he came across a book called To Sell as Human and realized selling is not only necessary, but is fundamentally human. That book was written by our guest, Daniel Pink. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Gene, thanks for having me. Thanks for that great intro.
Absolutely. So that
I recognize the structure.
I hope you do, because that is one of the pitches, one of the six pitches that you talked about in your book, To Sell as Human, and that is the Pixar pitch. And it works, right?
So the different, you know, one of the things that I tried to do for this book, To Sell as Human, is see if we could get beyond the elevator pitch. And one of the pitches that surfaced was, as exactly as you say, something called the Pixar pitch, which is a pitch modeled on sentence narrative structure of a typical Pixar, which you proceeded to demonstrate with extraordinary skill.
Well, thank you. My head is big enough. My headphones are barely on them, but might have to switch to the in-ear headphones now. Pitches work. They're great. And to kind of bring it back to physical therapy, and I had this epiphany, and your book helped a lot in this, is that to a lot of people, selling is a dirty word. And I think that's based on experiences, preconceived notions. And a lot of it goes back to that used car salesman, for better or for worse. But that's not necessarily the case, because, as you know, again, in your book, you pointed out, you reference physical therapy because you have to sell the benefit of exercise. You have to sell the benefit of movement. You have to sell the benefit of health to people that are in pain that might not necessarily want to do that all the time.
Right.
And exactly. You know, you go through that every day. So how can you change somebody's perspective, somebody's thinking, that selling is not a negative thing? It's not really wanting something always from somebody, but it's actually wanting to have a mutual benefit.
That's a long road. And I think that that's the destination at the end of the road. And that's what that, and at some level, that was the objective of this entire book, which is to help people rethink what sales is. But the big change that is going on here is a change in information. In the old days, in any kind of selling, let's use the word selling expansively. It's not only selling a widget or selling consulting services. It could be, it's selling your idea at a meeting. It's selling your team on doing something different or doing something in a different way. It is, as you say, selling your patient on a course of behavior change or a regimen that might not be entirely appealing. And one of the most important things that's happened in that world is the following. That world used to be a world of information asymmetry, where the seller of the idea, the behavior change, always had more information than the buyer. When the seller has more information than the buyer, the seller can rip you off. The seller has a lot of coercive power. The buyer doesn't have many choices. The buyer doesn't have a way to talk back. Information asymmetry. Let's say cars, for instance. You know, 20 years ago, car dealers had a lot more information about cars than car buyers had. Information asymmetry is a world of buyer beware. Buyers have to beware because they're at a huge disadvantage. Sellers have a big edge. Watch yourself, buyers. Now, things have changed, though. And this is a remarkable change that's occurred in an incredibly quick fashion across a range of markets, however we even think of markets. Today, we live less and less in a world of information asymmetry. We live in something much closer to a world of information parity. You see it again in that quintessential example of cars. You can now go into a car dealer and know as much about cars, as much about Toyotas, as much about Toyota Camrys as that car salesperson does. It's true in the field of, you know, medicine and health and allied health broadly. You have patients coming into physicians or even into physical therapists saying, I know what's wrong with me. Here's what you need to do, because they have access to information that they didn't have 20 years ago. So we've gone from this world in every dimension, like whether it's recruiting or even things like dating. We've gone from this world where buyers have not much information, not many choices, and no way to talk back, to a very different world, where a world where buyers have lots of information, often as much as sellers, lots of choices, and thanks to social media, all kinds of ways to talk back. That's a fundamentally different world. That's a world of seller beware. Now, the sellers are on notice. And the argument of the book, what this basket of ideas is screaming out to us is that we're in this remade landscape, this landscape of seller beware, and seller beware plays by a very different set of rules than buyer beware.
That's absolutely true, and it's a great point. And I think the danger with that whole notion is having a lot of information is not necessarily understanding that information. Even, you know, the buyer might have a lot of information about that car, but how to process that information to make it relevant to their everyday lifestyle. You know, you might know everything about a truck, doesn't mean you need a truck. You might need a hybrid or something like that. And I think it's even more dangerous, difficult to process in the healthcare world, because Dr. Google is a dangerous thing. All this information is a blessing and a curse. And I think the term selling, it happens all the time. And I'll make a case here for you, counselor, if you don't mind. Physical therapy is the most seller healthcare field out of all of them. And here's why. In physical therapy, patients come to see the PT on average 1 to 3 times a week, which is a lot more than most other healthcare professionals, right? You see your dentist once a year, you see your MD once a year for a checkup or something, if you're not feeling well. Some allied health, other ones, you see a couple times a week, but not as often as a PT. So you have somebody that comes to see you more than once a week and usually in pain. And more than once a week, you have to spend 30 to 60 minutes with them explaining and selling why they have to keep coming back every time for 4, 6, 8 weeks, if they have surgery, even more than that. And this happens all the time. And nobody calls it selling because, again, of the connotation of the word, but it happens all the time. And I think what that is, it's if you change the words, it makes perfect sense. And it's not selling, we call it educating. Right. Education, patient education is this huge holy term, because there's a lot of research behind it that shows when you educate patients, the outcomes improve. And that's all it is. You're educating patients for a end result, for their better improvement. But all you're doing is you're selling an idea of something that works. And that's what really selling is, isn't it?
Today, absolutely. I mean, I agree with you on a number of different dimensions. Let's start with the beginning of your comment. It's true that patients have an enormous amount of information, and what that has done. So you know, one of the consequences of this move from buyer beware to seller beware is it's put a premium on a different set of abilities for persuaders of all kinds, sellers, educators of all kinds, and what you identify are two very important changes. One of them is that is a move from accessing information as a comparative advantage. It used to be that medical professionals, like health professionals, they had information that other people didn't have that gave them an edge. Now, when everybody has the information, and as you suggest, Gene, a lot of it is nonsense. The premier shifted from the skill of accessing information to the skill of curating it. Can you make sense of it? Can you separate out the signal from the noise in it? The other thing you said, which is, I think, spot on, is another big change is that a lot of people in the persuasion business, you know, let's call it persuasion, influence, selling, whatever, like to call themselves problem solvers. But now, if anybody, if I have to confront a problem that is relatively simple, I don't need anybody else to help me solve it. I can find a solution on my own. Where I need somebody, whether that person is a business-to-business systems integrator person, or whether that person is a PT, where I need somebody is not to solve a problem necessarily, but when I'm wrong about my problem, when I don't know what my problem is. And so the premium has shifted from problem solving to problem finding. And when you think of it that way, are you able to help people make sense of information? Are you able to surface learning problems? That is, as you rightly suggest, a version of education. What you're trying to do is try to educate people. You're trying to serve people. You're trying to persuade in, I would argue, more enlightened, more service-oriented, less coercive way. And as you say as well, ultimately a more effective way.
And I think that comes back to the term that you talked about is non-sales selling, which once I read that and started to really think about it, it made perfect sense for healthcare because that's what it is. You're selling without really being in sales necessarily. And you're trying to get somebody for a mutual benefit for both parties. Patient gets better. You benefit. They come to see you. They spread the word. And if you think of it that way, you don't have that guilt that comes with trying to sell somebody something.
Right. Exactly.
And the fundamental part of selling, I think, is in the question and the problem. How important is it to ask the right questions, but knowing what the problem is?
It's a really good question. Let's take a business example and a health example. So if it's a business example, let's take this. So I need a case for my iPhone. Okay. I don't need a salesperson for that. All right. I know exactly what my problem is. I need some protection for my iPhone and I can find all the information I need with a few clicks. All right. So if I know precisely what my problem is, I don't need any help. I don't need a quote salesperson if that's not my problem. And so if I come into, again, so Monday example, I come into my Apple store and say, I need a case. That in itself simply gives me a case. I'm not sure he or she is necessarily doing the job. What he or she would be a better off doing is saying, okay, tell me about your iPhone. What kind of iPhone do you have? Do you have Apple Care, et cetera, et cetera? Asking those questions and figuring out, is that really my problem? And the same thing is true, I think, with healthcare. I think one of the great things that happened in healthcare writ large is the advent of some of these very, very low-cost providers, like a Minute Clinic. So let's say that I am sneezing and I'm stuffy, I have a stuffy head, blah, 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 blah. I might say, oh, crap, I have a sinus infection. I need to get antibiotics. So maybe instead of going to my physician, I will at 8:30 at night go over to CVS, go into a Minute Clinic, and that person will ask me questions, but it's fairly routine set of questions. They're basically confirming my problem. But if I would go into my physician, you know, he might say to me, he might ask me different questions. He might not simply say, oh, you say you have a sinus infection. Let me ask the questions that I need to ask for sinus infection. He might take a broader view. How are you sleeping? How are you feeling? Have you been traveling recently? So that ability, as you say, to ask the right questions becomes enormously important in educating people, but also in making sure that you're dealing with the correct problem, not just the problem that presents itself initially.
WebPT is the ultimate EMR for physical therapy. You know that. One of the reasons is because they know ICD-10. and I don't. So I ask Heidi Janenga, COO of WebPT. Heidi, what the heck is ICD-10?
Well, ICD-10 is diagnosis codes on steroids. We're talking more than 68,000 codes. All HIPAA-covered entities must switch to ICD-10 on October 1st, 2015, or face claim denials. That's where WebPT can help. Our intuitive ICD-10 code selector is built right into our documentation platform, thus simplifying the patient diagnosis process. I encourage all of you to check it out. Visit webpt.com/podcast to request a free online demonstration.
By asking questions, it's also the psychological aspect of the one-on-one communication, right? When you ask questions, people are a lot more responsive to answering and starting that communication process. If you ask a question, it leads open and it can open up other avenues and other answers that you might not have gotten by making statements or assumptions. And if you go down that path, I think you can really figure out what the not necessarily what the outcome will be, because that takes some time, but the routes you have to go to get there. And questions lead to answers, one of obviously, but they also lead to more questions. And one of the questions that I've had for a while actually has to do more with identity. And it doesn't matter how good you are at whatever you do, if people don't really know that, if people don't really know what you do. And I think physical therapy has a big identity issue, because I really don't think mass population, most people really know what PTs do. And granted, you know, that's a statement that probably a lot of niche businesses can make and do make. You probably hear this a lot when you're in a certain field for so long that you feel you're biased to it. So let me ask you, Dan, when I say physical therapy, what do you think of? What comes to mind for you?
I think of somebody in scrubs leading someone slightly infirm through exercises.
Okay, that's interesting. That's not too
that's
far.
That's a very conventional view, I understand, but that's, you know, that's the picture that emerges in my head.
Yeah, well, look, it's better than what I usually hear. And soapbox is I hate these pictures of people in polo shirts just stretching somebody's leg, laying on, because that's like the standard stock image.
Oh my! Okay, yeah.
Oh, Dan. I actually started a hashtag on Twitter, hashtag no polo, when we talk about this stuff. I despise the polo shirted, khaki pleated man of stock images of physical therapy stretching hamstrings for no apparent reason.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the prevailing thought in a lot of instances. And yours is actually not too bad, because, you know, PTs, we still have an identity crisis, because some are very much about movement. You know, they want to claim movement. PTs help with movement. Others are more hands-on with manual therapy. And others, there's a subset of research-based people that everything has to be based on research. And if research doesn't back it up, then you shouldn't be doing it. And everyone has a point, but the one that really matters is the person in front of you, right? You have to sell the person in front of you what you're going to do, and they have to buy in. So if you have to give a strategy, some or a few strategies to help sell somebody an idea that's right there in front of you, what would you recommend?
There are a number of different things that you can do. So one of them is simply one of the most, I think, the easiest, lightest weight, highest impact would be something like this. There's a raft of evidence out there showing that people are more likely to do something if you explain to them why you want them to do it. So a lot of times we, you know, think about kids doing homework. Kids say, "Why do I have to do this homework?" And grown-ups simply say, "Shut up and do your homework." All right. So when people know why they're doing something, they're much more likely to do it. And so explaining not simply that you must do this set of exercises, you must follow this regimen, you must do what I tell you to do, but if you explain to them, okay, this is why we're doing this, this is what it hopes to accomplish, people are going to be much more receptive. That's one. The second, another idea would be to go back to your point about questions. people's questions to surface people's own reasons for doing something, that's going to work significantly better. So if you do something like, there's an old technique in motivational interviewing where you ask people who are maybe resistant to do something, you ask them two questions. Question one, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you to do this thing? And they say, you know, they're not that ready. So they say 2 or 3. Your response to that is saying, okay, you're a 2, no problem. Why aren't you a 1? And they have to be defending why they're a 2 and rather than a 1, and that in surfacing some of their own reasons for doing things. So if you explain why, give people some context, and you use questions to help them surface their own autonomous, intrinsically motivated reasons for doing something, those are two approaches that can work really, really well for physical therapy, and they don't cost a dime.
I love that approach of the 0 to 10 and asking them why it's not lower. I've tried that many times. The first time it's kind of uncomfortable, like most things. But the more you do it, the more it's incredibly effective, because again, it leads down that questioning path and really figuring out the motivation behind people's no's a lot of times or unknowns. And it makes perfect sense. And I have a 3.5-year-old, and one of the things we say is whenever he answers with because, you know, if we ask him a question, he says because, we say that's not an answer, you have to answer. And we get caught doing that ourselves sometimes. He asks us a question because 3.5-year-olds, that's all they do is ask questions. And right. You know, sometimes we're doing something or we just say, well, because, and he turns around right back in our face and he says because is not an answer, and kind of stops us in our tracks, and we have to really think about it. And if you can explain
good
something
to me. Yeah. Smart kid.
My wife is a reading specialist, so he picks up on that. Plus he gets all the business and selling stuff for me, so we're in trouble.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in big trouble. Sounds like he's not in trouble, but it sounds like you're in trouble.
No, he's mostly a good kid. We've done all right. Got another one on the way, so we're kind of nervous about what that's going to be like, because he's been good. So we're figuring that the karma has to even things out, the balance of children in the family. So we shall see.
Yeah.
All right. So coming back to the selling, I think few people get the understanding body language, the nuances of movement. You described the mimicking exercises that you did with the acting classes. And I think physical therapy, it's a very, wasted, but maybe underused skill, because we are clinically trained to interview people. And that's kind of, you know, we have clinical skills of selling, of interviewing, of understanding movement, nuances of body language. But I don't think we use that. I mean, understanding different movement is really important for selling, right?
Sure.
And how can somebody, what are some things to notice or to keep track of in movements or reciprocating movements? That's the word I want. What do you look for in selling?
Let's take a step back and figure out what's the point of the exercise here. The point of the exercise is something that I call attunement, which is, can you understand someone else's point of view? Can you understand where they're coming from? Different ways to get people to do things. You can coerce them, you can bribe them, you can threaten them, but those don't necessarily work very well in the long term. And so in the long term, what you want to do is want to be able to understand where people are coming from, see their point of view, and establish common ground. And so the way that you attune yourself to others, there are myriad ways to attune yourself to others, but one of them actually, as you say, has a physical component. So if you stand the way they're and use their gestures, sort of mirror their facial expressions, even use their language rather than your hyper specialized language, you are likely to understand their perspective. Now, this sounds a little duplicitous, right? But the research on this is voluminous. It's really extraordinary. And what it shows us is that this idea of mimicry is part of being human, that human beings, we understand each other in part by that mimicry is an aspect of understanding someone else's perspective, that it isn't duplicitous, it's what people do. Now, you can see that if you go to, you know, if any of your listeners are people watchers, go to a crowded space, you know, whatever, a downtown area or even a shopping mall, watch people interacting with each other. People who like each other, who know each other, watch what they're doing, watch it through the wide angle lens of a wildlife photographer, and you'll see it's something that looks slightly choreographed, people mirroring each other's movement. So this is part of how we understand people. And so mirroring these kinds of things without being idiot about it can be very effective. And I think that in terms of the language, that's one of the most, I think, one of the most important, interesting facts and mimicry, which is that a lot of highly expressive people try to convince, persuade others by using their own specialized language rather than the language of the people who they're trying to persuade. And if you reflect back other people's language, you have a better, you have much more of a fighting chance to actually get their consent, get them to do what you hope they should be doing.
Absolutely. Completely agree. Well, Dan, thanks so much for taking the time. Dan's going to be at Private Practice Section meeting in Orlando in November. So definitely make sure you check out. He's one of the keynotes. We'll be there. His book, To Sell as Human, is, if you haven't read it, you definitely need to read it. It was recommended to me by my friend Jerry Durham. And Dan, Jerry is one of your biggest fans. He'll be at PPS, probably with a sign. He'll be the groupie going, go, Dan, go.
All right, cool. Let's go.
Yeah, so if you see that guy, that's Jerry. Just say hi, Jerry.
All right.
He'll buy you a bourbon.
Great questions. Glad talking to you, and I'll see you in Orlando.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us. Your website is danielpink.com. Is that right?
Or danpink.com. They both go to the same place.
Danpink.com. So check out Dan. Check out his book. All great stuff. And again, thanks so much for taking the time.
All right. Thanks so much. Cheers.